Welcome to WGMC at 50, a historical podcast series reflecting back on the five decades that WGMC Jazz 90.1 has been on the air in Rochester. WGMC 90.1 FM signed on for the very first time on November 1st, 1973.
We now commence with our first day of broadcast.
I'm Rob Linton, station manager of Jazz 90.1, and I've spent the past few months talking with WGMCers, past and present, and those who have had a hand in getting this radio station to where it is today, again, celebrating our 50th golden anniversary.
Welcome to the first broadcast by the Monroe Educational Radio Association Network.
We'd like to thank everybody who has participated in this series so far, and we invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy an oral history of WGMC at 50. Well, welcome to WGMC at 50, our podcast celebrating our 50th anniversary, and I'm honored to be joined today by Todd Blyde. Todd, you are our first guest on this podcast series. Thanks so much for taking the time and coming to hang out with us.
Glad to be here, Rob, and talk about the early days of WGMC.
Well, if you could give folks an idea of what your involvement with the station was, how you got involved, and kind of the different things that you did back in the day.
Well, it started out with I was in the heady days of freshman year in high school. Station manager Louis Betstadt made a presentation to the incoming freshman class in the gym, mm-hmm. talking about the station and, you know, soon to be going on the air and looking for folks to come on down and be a part of it. And while I had not really thought about, you know, broadcasting per se, I had, played radio when I was a kid with some record players and a microphone and a reel-to-reel tape deck. So it was interesting. And I was sort of a techie person, too. So when I first got there, I was like, never mind this talking on the air stuff. But, boy, I'd love to be like an engineer or a technician. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to call Lou Betstadt Lou after so many years.
Right.
But Mr. Betstadt said, you know, try it. You might like it. If you don't, you don't have to do it anymore. So I was there for 8 years, from September of 73 until October of 1980, which was the bulk of it was the entirety of the 10-year era and the first 6-8 months of the higher power 2050 mm-hmm. watt stereo. And during that time, they were looking for people to do everything, and I did just a little bit about of everything. I had management positions 7 of the 8 years. I did my own show, did other shows as needed during the school day hours. The so-called student programming was after 2 o'clock. Did news, public affairs, covered elections, covered other events as required, engineered shows for others, just about everything except sports.
Good evening, it's 8:27 on WGMC, the community station in Greece, New York, and welcome to Greater Greece Top 40 for the 11th of April, 1979. My name is Todd Blyde, and for the next 2 hours, I'll be bringing you the best of Top 40 music of the past, present, and future here on WGMC. Tonight, we're featuring such artists as Olivia Newton-John, A Little River Band, Paul McCartney and the Wings, Billy Joel, Poco, Gloria Gaynor, Melissa Manchester, The Village People, Linda Ronstadt, The Doobie Brothers, Orsa Leah, Amy Stewart, and many others right here on Greater Greece Top 40. Don't forget, we're going to be on until 10:30 this evening with the best of Top 40 music. So keep it set here at 90.1 FM WGMC. This is a theme song we've had for the last 5 years now, TSOP, The Sound of Philadelphia, by MFSB, Mother, Father, Sister, and Brother, from their first album, Love is the Message. And a very good evening to one and all. Welcome to Greater Greece Top 40. It's 8:30 on WGMC Greece. My name is Todd Blyde.
Love is in the air, everywhere I look around.
Idi Amin went back in the air today. claiming he still controls Uganda, but the new broadcasts were made from an unspecified transmitter site in northern Uganda because Amin's capital of Kampala fell earlier today to invaders from Tanzania. Dancing with Orleans from their album Let There Be Music, the summer of 1975, Where Were You, when that was number one. This is Miss Orsalia on the community station, Super GMC.
Now, you, excuse me, did, as you mentioned, quite a few different positions. What was it designed back then to have students go through all the different areas in the station to see where they land, or was it your choice to get your hands in on so much? How did that work back then?
It was mostly your source. There wasn't any rotation through departments.
Right.
You came in and expressed your interest in doing things, and in every case, you were allowed to try, and if you wanted to stay doing those things, you were allowed to, and as your skills improved, you would become more proficient and possibly promoted to a department head position. The first year, and the only year they had it, I was the personnel director, so it was a paper-keeping job, but we had over 300 volunteers in that first year. I still have the personnel file in my file cabinet downstairs. And that was the way we kept track of all the people that wanted to be involved in the station and what their progress was, whether they were working on announcing, engineering, news, sports, all the various departments were available. We had a United Press International teletype machine in the office. So news in the early days was the so-called rip and read, mm-hmm. We would just rip off stories or the headlines and put them on the air during the scheduled newscasts. I was honored to be able to do the first newscast at 3 o'clock on November 1st, mm-hmm. and still have the teletype copy in my collection as well, talking about President Nixon and all sorts of things like that. So usually Lou Bedstadt, in association with Mike Tarkulich, the chief engineer, they would get together, assess students and adults' capabilities, and would then, you know, promote some to be department heads. And there was a mixture of adults and students the entire time I was there. It was never just one or the other. Station was never run as a student operation. It was always a community mm-hmm. operation. And I think that was the big value of it for those of us that worked there at the time. Other than the experience of, you know, being on the air and working in radio, mm-hmm. was that students got to work with adults on an equal basis. They weren't teachers. They weren't parents. They might be supervisors if they were a department head. But other than that, you were working hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder with adults to run the radio station. And I thought it was very valuable. And it helped me make the person that I am today by working with all of these fantastic adults on an equal basis mm-hmm. to run the station and put out our broadcast.
Now, you started out obviously in high school, but made the decision to stay through college. What was the driving force, and not just waving goodbye when you walked across the stage at graduation? What kept you coming back as a volunteer?
Well, it was there were several factors. The first, I went to St. John Fisher College. Mm-hmm. Which did not have an on-air radio station. It had a carrier current AM station that was available in the dorms by plugging your radio into the electrical sockets. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a bad operation, but it wasn't the same as being on the air. Also, I had made friends with many of the colleagues, if you will, at WGMC. So since it was still here in town, there was no reason to leave. And the experience was very good, so that if by the time I went to college, I went to college for broadcasting at Fisher, and it was a great way to keep my hand fully in it for potential advancement into the professional broadcasting sphere. You know, by the time 1977 came around when I graduated, a good number of us were good enough to become professionals, and some of us did. Mm-hmm. But those are the two main reasons that I decided to stay through college and did just about till the end of college and graduating and going into the professional sphere then.
Now, where did you go in the professional world after you got done with college?
Well, when I was in my last several years at GMC, I was a board operator at WVOR. Mm-hmm. And I eventually ended up doing noon to midnight half the day on Sunday because it was all pre-recorded syndicated programming or locally produced programming on tape. After that, a number of my St. John Fisher classmates learned that a new owner was purchasing WGBA in Geneva. Mm-hmm. And he was looking for some additional staff members. So they clued me in and I went there and worked part-time. And then after about 4 months, was promoted to the midday show. So that was my first full-time professional job in Geneva on WGBA AM, the champion of the finger.
And a lot of people listening right now may remember that station.
Yes, it was affiliated with WBBF. They were co-owned in the 50s and early 60s. So Jack Palvino and others came up through WGBA and then were promoted to WBBF in Rochester. Mm-hmm. Not the same when I was there, but I did end up moving to a Rochester station after working 3 years in Geneva.
Where'd you end up in Rochester?
It was WYLF-FM, the music of your life, and the music of my parents' generation. But very enjoyable, and was the program director there for 3 years.
Yeah. Are there any memories of your time at GMC, looking back, that you truly value and cherish, things that were wonderful for you to go through, to experience with the station?
Well, you know, at the beginning it was everything because I and the others had never done any of it. You know, broadcasting was unknown to most of us. Mm-hmm. No professionals came and volunteered at the beginning or anything like that. So we were all learning together how to run the equipment, how to run the transmitter, how to make recordings, how to cue records, all kinds of things. And the friendships with people that were there, many of which are still lasting to this day, were fantastic. You know, I can't point to one specific, you know, this particular broadcast or that particular event, but in doing all the various things we did, and there were, you know, a lot as we learned and did remote broadcasts, and we used to do a thing called Saturdays Live at Long Ridge, where we broadcast from Long Ridge Mall, and, you know, these were things that were all new, different, and exciting.
Yeah.
And those of us that did them together really enjoyed it. So I can't give you a specific aha.
Right.
But I can say that that combination of all those different things really made for some lifetime friendships and certainly prepared me for my broadcast career.
Now, back then as well, you happened to be kind of there when the efforts were being made for the first power increase that the station wanted to go to. Started at 10 watts. They worked really hard to get up to 2,050 watts. And it had to be interesting to see kind of how that unfolded and obviously the length of time that it took for that to unfold as well.
It was. We actually had on-air promos promoting the fact that we were less power than the average light bulb. Most people had, you know, 60, 7,500 watt light bulbs. Mm-hmm. I wish we could have put a light bulb up on the roof and had a lot better coverage than the blasting 10 watts did. Now, the 10 watts covered more than most people think. Mm-hmm. But the big problem was, if you look at a profile map of the town of Greece, Ridgeway Avenue is hundreds of feet higher than our antenna was on the roof of Athena. So it was like a big wall that we just couldn't overcome. We could make it to parts of the city and a little bit westward, but we couldn't cover the entirety of Greece, and that was our mission. Mm-hmm. So Lou and Mike, the station manager and chief engineer, made several applications to the FCC to raise power. The first two were turned down outright because there was an agreement between the FCC and the Canadian Broadcasting Board that controlled their broadcasting, like the FCC does here, to not have interference from one side of the border to the other. So Windsor, Ontario was given, the CBC in Canada gave out licenses or reserved frequencies for people at a particular power in case they ever wanted to put a station on. So they had licensed a station for 50,000 watts from Windsor, Ontario on 90.1. Well, that would have created interference to us, and we would have created interference to them. So looking at that agreement, they were like, sorry, no. But the third time we applied, they kind of re-examined the law because us and another station, I want to say it was somewhere maybe in the Adirondacks, were both applying for the same type of relief. Because we told them, look, if there's interference over Lake Ontario, the fish don't care.
Right, right.
So, you know, we're happy to take any interference that there is right up to the shoreline. Mm-hmm. So both entities ruled that, okay, you know, if you're, we had to accept the interference. The other station didn't exist and, in fact, never went on the air, mm-hmm. which made it kind of go away. But they recognized that particular facet of our application. And finally, in 1980, they granted it. So we had been having roller skating parties and other events to raise money. So we had raised enough money to purchase the transmitter and the antenna. Mm-hmm. We already had stereo equipment in the studios. So it was just a matter of hooking it all up and flicking the switch.
Talk about some of the, you know, I've always heard about the famous roller skating parties. Talk about some of the different ways that you went about raising funds. The funding model back in that time is different than it is now, but talk about that a little bit. What did you guys do as a station to raise funds for equipment, all that kind of stuff?
Well, we were lucky that, you know, the school district at that time funded Lou and Mike's salaries, mm-hmm. and gave us some operating money. So we weren't poor per se, and we didn't have to raise money to continue operations as you do now. Mm-hmm. However, we wanted to assist with that, and if we wanted a particular thing, we didn't have to always want to put our hand out to the Board of Education.
Sure.
So we started out with the very first thing were bumper stickers that the district printed for us. And then the next thing after that was the Chamber of Horrors, which I know you have posted some of the
yes.
placard cards for that for your history segment on your website.
Yep.
And that really was a chamber of horrors, mm. not in a good way. Mm. The 25 people that were there were appalled.
So explain what that was, if you could. Briefly explain what that was.
It was a traveling troupe of entertainers that put on a, you know, Dracula, vampire type of, you know, haunted castle
sure.
type of onstage presentation. And there was some audience participation, several of our volunteers, you know, were part of the show. Mm-hmm. And we put it on at the Olympia Auditorium because Athena at the time only had a small auditorium called the Forum.
It
only sat mm-hmm. like, I don't know, 200. It was very small. And so we had it over at Olympia so that we would have far more seating. Wasn't necessary, it turned out, but okay. and then after that, you know, that it was a fun show to do, but it didn't raise much money.
Sure.
In fact, I think we kind of lost money in it. But you had to try something. Then we sold buttons. I tried to find mine, but I wasn't able to. Big yellow button about this big mm-hmm. that said, do it on WGNC.
Yeah.
after that, there were T-shirts. Mm-hmm. This one here. And then we made an agreement, the United Skates of America. Mm-hmm. Took over an abandoned storefront up on Ridge Road and put in a indoor roller skating rink.
I believe where Home Depot is now is where
that is correct.
Yep.
That is correct.
Yep.
I don't remember who used to be there, but there was a store of some kind yep. in there. But they took over the property, turned it into the United Skates of America, and I think it ran for 10 or more years. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for ways to promote themselves and get people in, and we were looking to raise money. So it was a great partnership that they allowed us to go there once a month. And we would do a roller skating party there, I want to say on Tuesday evenings, and we would split the money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, several staffers would always be there. We didn't broadcast from there, but we always promoted the fact that we were going to be there and that it would be a fundraiser and it would be a great time. And we made a good deal of money by doing that monthly for, I want to say, 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. It was our biggest fundraiser for sure. And I almost forgot, but the actual initial fundraiser before the station went on the air was selling shares in education. It was like stock, but it was stock to fund the creation of the radio station. Mm-hmm. That was before I was there, but I was told about it. And, you know, there was a whole pile of unsold chairs still sitting in the cabinet. So I got to see that. So we didn't have to do a lot of fundraising, but we did what we could.
Right.
Both with student events and adult events combined. So It was challenging, but fun.
Well, Todd, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us. And my final question for you is, you know, you've been kind of following what the station has done since you've been involved. What is it like for you today to look back at the past 50 years and see how far GMC Jazz 90.1 has come?
Well, I have to say that I am very proud of where it's come, because it still retains a lot of the aspirations and service and still owned by the school district that it did at its start. It's fun to see that it is now a fully professional radio station. You and your team have done a great job. I enjoy listening to the station, because even though I'm living here in Maine, thanks to the World Wide Web, you can be heard worldwide, unlike our Tanwates.
Yes.
And so I'm very proud of you and your team. And I have worked with a couple of your volunteers or staffers. Joelle and I worked at WBBF, WBEE together. And Gary Smith was the program director and afternoon personality when I worked at WVOR. So those two people, as part of your history now, were people I was involved with in my professional career not long after I left GMC.
All right. Well, Todd Blyde, thank you so much for taking the time on our WGMC at 50 podcast. We hope that you can get into the studios here soon at some point and check the place out. Take a tour.
You bet. And if you're doing something on November 1st, look for me.
All right. Thank you for checking out this episode as part of WGMC at 50, the podcast series celebrating 5 decades of Jazz 90.1 WGMC. Be sure to check back often as we plan to upload new episodes every week or two, celebrating those folks who have come through our doors, making this great radio station what it is today. Also, don't forget to check out our website. Our 50th anniversary page is loaded full of historical pictures, articles, audio, video, and so much more. This is Jazz 90.1 WGMC station manager Rob Linton. Thank you again so much for tuning in.